Time to check back in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for our Tacky Talk podcast. Hey, Tacky, how are you doing today?
Hey, Joe. Not too bad today, despite the forest fires giving us air quality issues. Even a few times I've gone out, particularly this week as well as this weekend. I mean, even I've realized that I'm having like allergy-ish type issues, and this end of the pollen season is over for me, actually. So I was a little surprised. I'm like, you know, coughing a bit more than I thought I would, given the fact that, you know, birch and oak trees are two of my big pollen problems have pretty much passed.
Yeah, it's so bizarre. And I saw the pictures from New York City with just a yellow orange haze over everything. So it's really been nasty.
Yeah, I've seen that before, actually, when I was on the Beijing trip back in 2017, where we were getting along a little better between the two countries. You know, we did the leadership delegation from the House. You know, Speaker Mariano, who was leader at the time, you know, came with us. And we were in Beijing at the right moment. Air quality was actually acceptable. And then we were flying out on the way to the airport. We saw an orange sun. You could see the smog ready to roll into the city. So we actually got in and out of Beijing at just the right moment, because you literally could see the smog. We're driving to the airport very early morning. The sun's rising and it's an orange sun. Yeah, we were like, we're just lucky we got out of there before that kind of like hazy thing just settled into Beijing.
Yeah, said. I mean, a lot of folks are taking back to the masks, not for COVID, but for the pollution.
Yeah, you gotta make sure your mask is again sealed correctly, because I find it not good if you get stuff coming in the sides and now you're just breathing it in, it recycles inside the mask. So I mean, just like you're in COVID, hopefully if you decide to use a mask, you know, make sure it's properly fitted. Otherwise, you're just recycling the bad air inside a small area of your mouth.
Yeah, it's probably making it even worse than it would be if you didn't have it on at all, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So. Thankfully, it's not that big here. We don't have an orange haze, but you're right. Those pictures and videos coming in New York City is pretty frightening. I mean, New York City had the worst air quality in the planet Mumbai was like, what, 160 was the number, and New York was at 400. I mean, it was shocking.
Yeah, really. So, and for folks who don't know, it's all from the wildfires up in the Quebec province of Canada.
Yeah, this is kind of a form of climate change in a weird way. I mean, obviously, we've seen forest fires, particularly in California. Some are man-instituted, some are nature-instituted fires. But obviously, you know, it's a drought area in that region for a very long time. And, you know, climate change has made it worse. This is a little bit different up here, obviously, but it doesn't take much. I mean, dry tinder will set off a forest fire, but it's a cloudiness issue of the air that kind of has a impact on the amount of sun we get, and also how obviously this rain pattern that we're in now too, because all that cloudiness impacts the weather pattern entirely, and we're sitting. Yeah, you're seeing the so-called omega effect. I saw on the news last night where the shape of the current looks like an omega symbol. So, yeah, we're going to be living this for a little bit longer. And, you know, I think, if I remember correctly, Massachusetts firefighters have volunteered to go up to help, you know, battle the fire in Halifax. And those of you guys have seen the California forest fires on the news. It isn't like just kind of spray down and you're done. This is a legit trying to a contain and let it finish burning situation.
Right. And it's in such remote areas that it's not like you pull up to the side of the road and put out the fire. It's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. You can't land it. You can't bring a fire hose line. This is a totally different type of firefighting. So hopefully, it's settled soon. Obviously we get some good rain in the Northeast, particularly, the Halifax area, that they'll go a long way on ending the air quality issue. But yeah, if you guys been, and I've had, some respiratory uncomfort, you know where it came from.
So let's talk about what's been happening the past week in your world, Tacky.
We had a public hearing this past Monday regarding a bunch of licensing issues. We're into the licensing part of my committee. So, coming up this Monday, we're going to continue licensing issues, including things like dentists and, not exactly dentists directly, but I mean, healthcare-oriented issues that aren't directly related to the licensing of a profession. It's kind of the consumer end of that. And we got some realtor-ish related stuff as well as other boards. Last week, we did a lot of the trade-related stuff. This past Monday, we did a lot of trade-related stuff, plumbers, electricians, that kind of stuff. And next week, we're doing a non-trade related hearing on Monday. We got a lot of conversation going. I call into the speaker's office about things like racing again, because simulcast extension expiration's coming up at the end of July. And this is one of those inside baseball things you see in the Globe and maybe Commonwealth Magazine every so often about this drama of simulcasting. And we're trying to work out a new time frame, as well as trying to see I can push out this comprehensive racing legislation to put this issue to bed once and for all. But it's a Senate initiative because a Senate president asked for it in 2019. And then we had 3 years of weirdness, and now we're trying to get back on work that we started 3-4 years ago. This ain't the only issue, but a bunch of other, like the direct line shipping is an issue we're going to be talking about with various industry folks later today on a Zoom call to try to close some of those loopholes. I'm aware GoPuff has appealed to the state regarding the ABC penalties. You talked about this morning on your podcast. I did listen to you this morning.
Thank you, Jackie.
And city licensing and police are paying more attention to GoPuff and Quincy, but those who don't know, they've been underserving to folks delivering the alcohol to people underage, which again brings me back to the Uber issue of restaurant delivery alcohol, where they are not licensed entities, Uber and Lyft and those other food delivery services are not licensed like GoPuff. So God knows what's going on in that world.
Right.
Which is something that ABCC and my committee is going to have to have more conversation with. If restaurant takeout to go alcohol continues, this is a regulatory issue that doesn't exist because there's no regulatory issues at all because there's no regulations.
Yeah, it's really the Wild West. It started because of the pandemic, right? Yeah.
And also kind of waiting to hear from Ways and Means and the Speaker's Office and Labor and Workforce Committee regarding the big hole that the former governor left behind, as you may have heard in the past.
The $2.5 billion hole.
Some of you have heard me beat up Charlie Baker a few times in 2023. It's much easier to beat up on people after they leave, but this is one of those issues that we've been very concerned about during the past 2 years of COVID regarding money that was handed directly to the governor to bypass the legislature from the federal government and what was going on with that money, as well as our own appropriations of ARPA money we set aside that working with the governor's office told us this was okay to do. And we're kind of, we are dependent on cooperation from the governor's people regarding our own legislative approval of spending, because we rely on them to provide, accurate, correct information. So, there's a lot of questions here about what they've been telling us the last couple of years about whether or not we were doing things right.
Yes.
Because, we do cooperate, folks. It isn't like we work in a vacuum, on our own, just kind of like, hey, we just decide things.
Is the issue that the feds are trying to claw that back now? Is that what's going on?
That is it. The federal delegation is going to have to try to see if they can give us some help. And it's a little quirky issue because it relates to unemployment trust fund. The clawback has to come out of the unemployment trust fund. And as you saw in the papers, the business community doesn't want to increase taxes on them for unemployment insurance tax. And we have suspended the increase on insurance tax for it feels like ever, but really for the last dozen years or so. And of course, as you guys can guess, if you don't increase unemployment tax on a schedule, the unemployment trust fund runs into a bit of a solvency issue if we have massive unemployment, not like COVID unemployment, like standard recession unemployment. And this has always been this tricky balance between, unemployment taxation on businesses while keeping a solvency issue of the fund. Should we find ourselves in a recessionary period with unemployment closer to 5% and 6%. Yeah. And this is a constant, balancing act on the businesses. But now, since that money was used to replenish the unemployment trust fund, and we had to take a loan from the feds on that, and we bonded money, which Baker was able to try to avoid issuing those bonds through the state treasurer's office because, he was able to use some ARPA money. Now we have this huge question mark about what to do. And I don't have an answer for you guys. It's okay. it's a lot of moving parts here. You can see a lot of different interests, and obviously what fund it benefit from, the clawback would be used against that fund. So stay tuned. There's a lot of drama playing out in the background, obviously, and the federal delegation can work out something, with the president, president's folks, basically the U.S. Department of Labor. Maybe we can find a solution here, but
yeah,
that's a pretty big nut that Charlie Baker left us.
How much of it do you think is related to fraud, Jackie? I know there was a lot of problems with that initially when the disbursements were being made.
You're right. I mean, you've seen articles around the country about various people doing fraud, not just unemployment, but ARPA money in general, mm-hmm. as well as stimulus money and benefit money, depending on the business. And it's I like the fact that obviously the biggest offenders make the news. And I'm sure it sends a shockwave to people who know there's something wrong, knowing that the feds are going to come get you. Right. There was unemployment fraud. I mean, mm-hmm. we got phone calls, we had identity theft. We talked about this before, about identity theft and COVID, but it's not $2.5 billion.
Okay. All right.
So, I mean, it was $2.5 billion of fraud. We really screwed it up.
Okay.
But I mean, it'll probably be in the tens-ish millions of dollars, which is not surprising. And there's also administrative errors by the Department of Labor, the unemployment division.
Yes. Yeah.
Made errors, and we did get some forgiveness from the Fed in those errors, which helps as well. Trying to claw back every single dollar was going to be rather problematic, as well as the fact since there was an error on the state's part during the COVID insanity in terms of trying to sort this out. We did get some forgiveness from the feds on some of those mistakes made by us. If you put it in perspective, folks, I mean, you're looking at tens and thousands of applications in a very short period of time for verification. People are not going to wait 8 weeks for unemployment benefits. They're going to, they're already scared and crazy. So you're understaffed, you got tens and tens of thousands of applications you got to try to resolve and confirm as quickly as possible. And, those of you know who called my office, we were trying to help expedite, but we were also very conscious and aware of the backlog issue. And these mistakes were going to happen. It's just inevitable given the volume.
Yeah, and as I understand too, there was a lot of the infrastructure was kind of outdated. It wasn't really set up to handle that type of volume, isn't that right?
That's actually correct. The technology wasn't designed for that, but you also need a manpower issue. Back when April 2020, when those unemployment calls came in, and let's say the biggest single spike everyone's ever seen in 1 week, there were only 50 employees working because that's the normal flow. I mean, mm-hmm. very low unemployment period. There was no reason to staff up, and no one could have anticipated what happened. So they had to gear themselves up to well past 2,000 people. Yeah. And a lot of it was virtual, and it's all a training issue. How do you train all these folks virtually? And, and then to try to do 6 days plus a week callbacks, 12 hours a day. And, not everybody's always on their phone,
Right.
So it was awful. And, I remember a lot of our constituent calls regarding missed calls, try to get back to people. It was tough. And you got, again, we also had the fraud issue. People were stealing your identity to try to fraudulently, get employee benefits too. So, and people don't realize this is a verification process. We have to verify employers about the situation, the layoff, and give the employers a chance to argue that, that unemployment is not allowed because of the nature of how the person was let go. So there's a whole process here. But when you're in that crisis, you're not going to, let's be honest about it, folks. I mean, you think you're going to be happy with me if I tell you you got 8 weeks to wait?
No, right. Obviously, people are trying to feed their families. They find themselves suddenly without a paycheck. They were already living paycheck to paycheck. So it's a crisis at that point. Yeah.
And not all employers are forthcoming quickly to confirm.
Right.
And there's an appeal process. If the applicant doesn't like the answer from the employer, there's an appeal process. And that takes time to go through. And that also frustrates people. And sometimes the employer's right, sometimes the employee's right.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where, I wouldn't say it was fraud intense that people were intentionally stole money, but as I kind of told you the process, and I'm being very generous about some of the time frames here. I mean, you start appealing it, it goes even longer, mm-hmm. Especially in a COVID situation, a lot of that was happening, and I won't say it was epidemic, but
right.
People are human.
Could the rainy day fund be used at all? I think there was $9 billion last time I heard.
Yeah, it's projected to be $9 billion after we've get through this year's budget.
Okay.
It's possible. I'm not entirely, again, not entirely clear how the clawback works, whether or not it's going to come from state taxpayer money or, but there's also this unemployment trust fund because that's where the money was deposited into. So the expectation is going to come out of there, which they don't have $2.5 billion.
Right. Yeah.
Or do we bond it?
Okay.
Do
Yeah.
we issue the
Sure.
bonds?
Interest rates are not great right now for that too.
No, it is not. I mean, the Fed Reserve rates between 5.5 and 5.25%. It is not a good time to do massive borrowing. And then you would have to borrow that money and stick it back in the trust fund and then take it from the trust fund straight back to the feds. As I said, I don't have an easy answer. And we're still trying to learn about how this is going to unfold. And I don't have enough information, but that's, because the nature of where the money was spent has to come back out of where it's spent.
Yeah, and it's not just Massachusetts, right? I mean, this is all across the country.
Yeah, I mean, this audit thing is real. I talk about clawbacks. You guys heard me talk clawbacks way back about ARPA money last year and even, last the winters of 2021. I expressed my real concern about the clawback situation as we spend the money. Some of it was actually free and clear. I mean, the state got like $1 billion plus of just whatever you want as part of the Fed COVID stimulus one. Which plugged a lot of holes in people's budgets. I've said before, you can't use this money for tax breaks. You can't use this for tax filling in tax reductions because you decided to give everybody a tax break. There are some criteria how the money's used. I'm not entirely clear on what the circumstances here is or exactly which clawback issue is. I'm not going to try to make this up and tell you what I think it is because I'm not sure. But I mean, there are conditions. And I've always expressed that, we got to make sure we're correct between us and the governor's office that, we don't find ourselves in that circumstance. And we're one of the few states got lump sum, by the way. We weren't done, we're in a part of a distribution. We're one of the few states that got our money both times, basically in one massive chunk. Generally, other states were looking at 2-3 year distributions.
Oh, I wonder why that was.
I'm not entirely clear myself, to be honest.
Yeah, something that the state delegation maybe negotiated in Washington.
It may be, or they trusted our accounting system. I'm not entirely clear. But yeah, not a lot of states got the, here's your money, dump this big check on your hands and move along.
Right.
Other states were looking at 2 to 3 year, partial distributions and, subject to audit in the interim.
Right, obviously, yeah. Interesting. Switch gears a little bit, and so I noticed from the Attorney General's office that she's now enforcing the right to repair law, which went into effect the 1st of June.
Yeah, the car industry did file an injunction request. The judge's issue there was that they don't know what the harm is because they can't demonstrate a harm to have that injunction. They only have a potential harm. And then you still have the federal case from the car industry regarding the laws unconstitutional because of basically Commerce Clause violations across state line business, as well as impossible enforcement. And the model cars in question's already been built and out and gone, and new models are being built. So the models they want to have done, is a bit of a problem. And of course, there's a ballot question in Maine along similar lines, but not identical lines. And the repair industry has not demonstrated they cannot repair cars. So this is, one of those things that I talked about before is really complicated. And there's also like my standpoint is very concerned about public safety as well, because as I learned from my brother in his Tesla, you know where that car is at all times. And it's not, when you're living in a world of hacking things and AI, who knows where this is going to take us and people getting a hand of your data, much less your car. And of course, domestic issues, you can track the person you're abusing, through your phone, and they may not even know about it. So, because of the data in your car, it's a lot of moving parts. So, I don't know how the Attorney General is going to enforce this because of the nature of the ballot questions written.
Yeah, she didn't indicate how either, just that she would.
Yeah, I agree, and I have no clue because the only thing she can do is injunct all the new car dealers and prohibit car sales without compliance, which means you can't buy a new car in Massachusetts.
Which not gonna won't fly very well.
No, we already had a new car shortage for a while. Supply chain is still complicated. Car prices are up because of supply chain and inflation of wages. And of course, we talk about interest rates. And it's already a challenged industry right now. And not, by the way, not having new cars come in is going to be very problematic. So, obviously a lot of repair shops in Massachusetts supported this. I won't say all of them, but many of them, but you can figure it out. They had the sign in the window. So you can thank them for this ballot question and the situation we may find ourselves in.
Yeah, and it's pushed up the price of used cars dramatically as well, and they're hard to get a hold of.
That still continues, although the data shows that the federal data shows that the used car prices have come down a bit, but not like massively. There is supply again for used cars, but again, nothing like it was pre-COVID.
Right. Yeah.
So, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, exactly.
The way if you buy a car across state lines, it's not unusual people buy cars in New Hampshire and Connecticut, Rhode Island. I mean, you still pay state excise tax and sales tax as a result of these sales from outside the state because when
Yeah,
you're
if you registered in Massachusetts, yeah, definitely, yeah.
yeah, so I mean, you got that enforcement issue as well regarding cars that come over the state line.
Yeah. You know what I ask you about, Jackie? I'm sure you saw the story about the state's guarantee trust fund when it comes to home contractors and folks who've had issues. And I think one of your colleagues is filing a bill to make some changes that, to update that act, if you will.
Yeah, have you seen the Cash the Contractor series that was but done by Ryan?
Yes, I forget what network it was, but yes, yeah.
Yeah, I want to say it's CBS. WBZ is
It's
channel
CBS, yeah.
CBS,
Yeah.
so channel 7, right?
That's four.
Four.
Yeah.
No, I
I know.
think.
I get them confused
Oh.
too.
It changed this one time, and I still can't remember because I'm thinking it's like 1985 channels. But yeah, it's Catch a Contractor series, and it talked about home contractors who are receive certification from the state, not licensed by the state. Big difference in certification license.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's a difference, big difference. Where they basically scam you by doing like 20% of work and walk away if you're with the deposit and don't come back again, and. It's yeah, the state's guarantee fund is that if you can't recover from the contractor after suing him in court, you're able to get some money out of guarantee fund. It's not going to cover your entire damages. It's generally about $10,000 is the max.
Right.
There's a series of process, including one of them is they got to be able to demonstrate you actually try to get the money. Means you got a constable to deliver a letter saying hey, pay up, and if they don't respond, and you have a shot at the guarantee fund plus other criteria. Like, yeah, there's a whole lot. It's like a list you have to do before you can get to the guarantee fund. So, one of our good friends, Sue Moran from the Cape, who was the chair, Senate chair of this committee, Consumer Protection Professional Legislature Committee, last session, obviously has some constituent impacts as well. And she filed legislation requiring better background checks in the matter and, more investigation regarding, home contractors that move on. As you may guess, some of the scams they do is the fact that they can just simply change the go bankrupt, change the business name, and reappear and do the same scam on people over and over again. And trying to identify these folks is not easy because it changed corporate names and there's a doing business as. And even for the state, that can be really tricky, because they basically end the certification and try to get a new certification. So,
Right. Yeah.
Senator Moran's trying to create some more accountability and some more ability, more ability and more reporting from these applicants, and try to figure out we're going to try we have to try to figure out a way whether or not we can get the guarantee fund, the home inspector contract certification agency of consumer affairs to be able to get some more verification. Is this like the repeat offender company because of the people who own it? It's out there. And like I said, these are civil cases, not criminal cases. And that's also the
Right.
other factor. And, we don't have the ability to go through civil court to find every single civil case against an individual. It's not like the Sex Offender Registry Board or e-checks where we have a criminal database. These are civil cases. And again, not all civil cases, as I talked before, result in a judgment in favor of the plaintiff. It may result in judgment in favor of the defendant too. So just because you've been accused in civil court and you win a case as defendant, you know, does not mean you may have not done something wrong or may have done something wrong. It's not like a criminal court.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And it's, you know, unfortunately, it puts a lot of the pressure on the individual homeowner to do their background check as diligently as they possibly can.
You're absolutely correct. That is exactly it. And, you know, you can use the, you know, Better Business Bureau or many websites with, you know, the, what do you call it, reviews, and people can, you know, make comments on various bulletin boards or,
yep,
or the neighborhood, you know, whatever that, yep, neighborhood blog that's out there now. And but I mean, yeah, it's up to the consumer to figure this out. And the most common one recently has, and that's Catch a Contractor series, you know, is about swimming pools.
Yep. Yeah. By the way, it's NBC 10 Boston. I looked it up. I want to give credit where credit is due.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. This is Ryan is it Sterling? I don't know. God, I can't remember these things anymore. But yeah, it's Ryan at that station. And yeah, swimming pools is the big one. Right, they dig a big hole and they walk away, and now you're stuck in a big hole.
Right, literally. Great, good, exactly. Yeah, and frustrating, I'm sure. You know, there was some concern. Some folks, it was their second home, so they weren't able to be reimbursed from that fund. Other folks, if their house was in a trust, so they weren't actually the owners. So there's a lot of nuances to it.
You're absolutely correct. Second homes, if you're not a direct ownership home, the guarantee fund cannot help you. Not surprising, you know, a lot of people did home improvement work during COVID. That was the time when, you know, these contractors, they're unscrupulous, you know, preyed on folks because they had, they were trapped at home. They were not spending a lot of the money to do travel at the time and decided they were making things like a pool, because no one knew how long you're going to be in the situation to, you know, as a way to pass the time comfortably at your own home. And, homecations, I think is the way to put it, staycations when you're in your home. And yeah, it's understandable, very understandable. And, you know, these scammers came up and, you know, there's one particular one that's been doing this for a long time and, you know, trying to get him not to do the work. Now, just keep this in mind, folks, also is that, you know, this is a certification, not a license, which means that you just basically certify with, you know, Office of Consumer Affairs, you're a contractor, you appear to be clean and so forth reporting. You do not need a certification to do home contracting work in Massachusetts. So you and I decided to go ahead and decided to like stop building decks. We can do that.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, certification is not a requirement to do work. It's not like, again, it's not a license. So you're not licensed, you can't do the work. So obviously, like you bring a plumber in, you have to be a licensed plumber as part of a home contracting job. And if the home contractor tries to plumbing, now that's illegal because they're operating over a license.
Okay.
So if you try to do work with a certified or uncertified home contractor, you need to make sure you're where the lines are, where you do not end up doing unlicensed work that exists within other professions.
Okay. Yeah. In the past, I've had some work done and I have found that the local building departments in the cities and towns are extremely helpful. So, you know, good advice is to make sure the permits are pulled because during that process, your building department is going to help you verify whether your contractor is legit or not.
Yeah, absolutely correct. You know, people's city and towns, home contractors have to engage. With the local building inspectors or, you know, inspectional services, depending what city or town you're living in. And they know all these folks. And you're right about the building permit. It's something that your contractor should be able to show you it's been done. And it's a good resource. You can call them up and say, hey, you know, I'm looking to do a home contracting job. And this is the person. Have you heard of this person before?
Yep, absolutely. And if there's an issue, you know, they might be able to lobby on your behalf. So just some personal experience I'm sharing with folks.
Yeah, I mean, this is part of providing information, right? Real life experiences, is something you can't replace.
Learn from our mistakes, folks. Exactly.
Well, I've made more than my share of mistakes. I think we've heard more than a few of them with this podcast already.
Well, that's how we learn. What's going on in the district, Jackie?
Well, it's been fairly quiet overall. Obviously, you know, hitting the summer months and school vacation starting very soon. I think next Friday school is out. There was almost no snow days this year.
I know. So, I think there was one.
Yeah, it was very quiet winter, and Juneteenth is on June 19th. So the school system has timed their release right before, normally would be a 3-day weekend in June. So yeah, I know it's pretty quiet overall. Flag Day is coming up, obviously, this Saturday. Every intention to be out there in the parade and say hi to folks. And Dragon Boat festivals go off on Sunday on the Charles River. So I generally go to that opening ceremony and go through that and say hi to folks there. And then I'm not sure if the city's doing anything for Juneteenth. There'll most likely be some Juneteenth ceremony up in Beacon Hill. Juneteenth is the day that the last state was informed and complied with the end of slavery. That's what Juneteenth is. June 19th, it was in Texas, was the last state that was sent word and complied with the new constitution. State
Like 2 years
constitution.
late, I think, wasn't it?
2 years late, U.S. constitutional compliance. Communication was different then, and compliance was hard. So, but I mean, you had to go out there and enforce. And Texas was the last one to comply with the end of slavery. So, which is why it's commemorated. Actually, oddly enough, one of the like last states in the country to actually recognize Juneteenth, which I was didn't realize, and how embarrassing that is when you think about it.
When it happened in that state, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because most many other states had some kind of Juneteenth on the books until we did it like 2 years back now. And I was like, really? We're like one of the last ones. I was very surprised because
Right.
abolitionism started in Massachusetts, in
Yeah,
Waltham.
that's right.
Remember, if I remember history correctly, it started in like a watch basement of a watch factory.
That sounds right. Yeah.
And abolition started here as a formal political movement, not just a statement of advocacy, like
Well, there was actually a party, right? The abolitionists, right.
a legit political party. This was their objective. So I was very surprised that the state where abolition began, didn't have Juneteenth. So it's also Pride Month. I understand Pride Day was kind of pushed out regarding the big thing they do at Marymount at the pageant field because of the weather. So I'm not sure when that's going to be rescheduled. So there's a few things going on, like and events in the district. And there's all actually tonight there's the Democratic City Committee caucuses for the September issues convention for the state committee.
Okay,
No.
so getting active,
Yeah, pop in, say hi. I am an ex officio, so I go to the conventions automatically, which is kind of nice.
We have a little bit of time left, Techie. MBTA.
You guys all see that the new general manager literally got him dunked into hot water right away. I mean, the poor guy's like a lobster. You just toss him right in the water right off the bat. And, they have to comply with the feds regarding safety issues. And I don't have to tell you all what they're like. There's plenty of news stories on this, but the safety of not just passengers, but safety of the employees and the shortage of employees creates workforce problems, people working too many hours and communication issues. And you can see that this is after many, many years of degradation of the system. And I heard that the hiring situation is still kind of challenged because they're still understaffed and unable to actually respond to everybody regarding job applications. I already heard from some folks that tried, and the follow-up wasn't all that wonderful. And then I also heard that the job fairs have become a complaint center for people as opposed to actually trying to be an applicant for a job.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the workforce shortage continues to be a real challenge everywhere. DCR can't get lifeguards. I mean, no someone who can be a lifeguard. I mean, $22 to $25 an hour is not a bad summer job. If you don't have lifeguards, I mean, obviously it's a huge public safety issue at the DCR pools and beaches. I don't know about other public entities looking for summer help, but it's a big issue. And then you also, like I said, you throw the T on top of that, which is going to have to still work in hiring and train 2,000 people
Yeah.
and sift through that entire process. So, and then of course that direct safety because not just public safety for us, people who use the T, but the safety of their own employees. And I think that was kind of a bit of a shock for people to realize that the T employees are at risk and your T employees are at risk. They're not going to want to work at the T.
Well, right. You know, we've seen the videos of these workers getting out of the way of a train just in the nick of time. So, something you would think that they would have some kind of procedure in place so that would never happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It is very troubling. Because again, it was not safe. Why would you work there? Right? Particularly when you're dealing with like trains coming at you, you have a third rail that's electric, you have obviously heavy equipment. And of course you've seen, bus drivers attacked in the state. It does happen here. People don't realize it. We've seen horrific videos of other states where that's happened. You saw the gunfire situation, which was just frightening to watch. Thankfully we haven't seen anything that horrific in Massachusetts, but customers do attack bus drivers. It does happen. You'd be surprised. You think everyone's like nice and civil, but even if the T is running properly, people are just crazy.
The bus drivers particularly are most vulnerable because they're front facing, with the public right there. There's no door like on the train, they're right there in front of them.
Yeah, and they're behind the seat with a big wheel. So, if you want to just attack one, I mean, they're prone for quite a while for those precious seconds when they're getting hit. They're in a prone position for a while before they can try to get out of their position to try and defend themselves.
Right, because they have to stop the bus safely first, yeah.
Yeah, and then get up behind a big wheel and then try to defend yourself. And it's you think about it in those terms. Yeah, it's not that easy.
Right.
So, you got all those, factors going on public safety for the T workers. And I'm still aware the red line's running slow. Are still doing a rail replacement. And as I talked about, before with Congressman Lynch and Senator Keenan when we did our site visit at Quincy Adams Station, public safety is a big issue regarding de-electrification of the third rail. And also, safety of employees laying down rail, and then, make sure the rail is safe before you put a train on it. It's very involved, a lot of science involved. I don't know how they did this 50 years ago, where they just sent young men at the time and just laid rail and just walked away. I have no clue. Because today it's very, very measured, like
Right.
to very small, minuscule errors to ensure rail is on there safe. It's time consuming.
One idea that the new T chief had, I thought was a good one, was to create, I guess he called them station chiefs. So actually a person in charge at each individual T station, which sounded like a good idea to me.
That would be a reversal from the Deval Patrick and the Baker administration's T general managers, who basically got rid of those. Remember, got rid of the person that was sitting in the fourth car of the train.
Yes.
The back look of the train to ensure that no one's trapped in a door. They got rid of the people at the T station doing customer service. This pilot Charlie card. They got rid of toll booth people. Remember the days you gave money, got a token out, the little tokens as opposed to a Charlie card.
I still have some that I never used, yeah.
Yeah. They got rid of those folks, and then they said they were going to do customer service people in replacement of the toll booth people and have them walk the station as being kind of mobile customer service, and that didn't materialize entirely. So this diminishment of the workforce has been ongoing from the Deval administration and Baker administration accelerated this as part of so-called cost savings at AT, which is the reason we find ourselves in this situation. I remember being with Marty Walsh. Back when he was a rep in like 13, and we just went at it with the T folks about the downsizing of employees, and they kept justifying as we automation with the Charlie cards, and you don't need as many bodies, and they can't find a reason why you need someone sitting in the fourth car of a train, where a lot of us, including myself, have done nighttime school when I was in law school at night, coming from Beacon Hill to doing the law. I like to sit in the fourth car. Because I knew that there was somebody physically there when I'm 10:30 at night trying to get home from law school.
Right.
And if there's a problem, you bang your fist on the window, and someone's going to be there.
Right. Yeah. And they have the ability to communicate with help if need be. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a medical emergency in the back of the train.
Right. Before the days of cell phones, folks.
Our cars 5 and 6, they can radio to the front of the train. They need help and, radio for assistance right away. It's also on hand eyes. And, if there's a need to break up a fight, if God forbid they have to get themselves into a confrontation, you have a person right there that's actually like an employee of the team that can do that. So, I know I'm talking ancient history. I'm sure some of these younger folks have no idea what I'm talking about. This is not a new issue the team's facing. Between the Duvall era and the Baker, and like I said, Baker's folks really accelerated this regarding getting, non-replacement employees to attrition.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, years down the road when the system is actually up to date and functioning and modern and state of the art, you could do away with some of those folks, but not right now.
Not right now, absolutely not. And there's also the low bid issue. We are a low bid state, not best bid state. There's a difference. So if you can meet the minimum requirements required in RFP and you provide the lowest bid, we take your contract, which is how we got the Chinese manufacturing car or rail car station in Springfield, where they basically bid at 30% lower than everybody else. And you get what you pay for, as opposed to best bid means, best quality company with the best bid possible. Yeah. And we're not that kind of state. And taxpayers do not like hearing about the fact that, because the news story, they don't like to hear about the fact that, there's someone that came in at a lower price and we took a higher price for the same work. And it's not like constituents, taxpayers, the public sits and read these RFPs and do the full background checks for these companies. If your company is demonstrated it can do the job, they have a history of doing the job, whether they do the best job is kind of a question mark. Right. They do come at the lowest price, you take the lowest price.
Okay. And like you say, you get what you pay for sometimes. Yeah.
That is unfortunately very true. And, particularly public safety issues like the maintenance of the T, this is a huge question mark. And I don't have an easy answer for it, because once you open this door on no longer taking the lower price, it opens this whole conversation about the rest of government. And, part of why we have things like the Pacheco Law, which requires state auditor to review privatization, is because of the concern about governors basically giving contracts to their buddies.
Right.
At a whatever price to scam the taxpayers.
That gets into campaign finance reform questions that we don't have time to talk about right now.
That's right. I mean, you help your friends or your major donors, or sometimes you just help your friends. I wouldn't even start naming some things I've heard, but it's not as easy as, okay, get rid of sub-bid. Get rid of low bid is, I get it, but there's a little, engagement that, why do we have like these, audits and fail safes, against privatization? And it's not against privatization. It's just ensure that taxpayers aren't being ripped off and part of that process. And
an
auditor has less than 5 times rejected a privatization proposal by a governor because they meet the requirements of demonstration of service and cost benefit to taxpayers.
We're out of time, unfortunately, but this is your time, Tacky, to tell you how to get a hold of folks.
Obviously you see us here, so call Joe if you got a problem.
I'll be sure and forward them to you.
You always can call the office at 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. You're going to hear it's Jerry Paracella's office. I've heard they changed the voicemail system again, or the automated system. But I am part of the system because I'm his suite. I don't actually control the suite. So you have to kind of wait to the bottom prompt to get my name to come up. And, you can just hit anybody in the office and, we do check our voicemails, get back to you. I do check my email at tacky.chan@mihouse.gov. I do look at that, but people kind of think I just sit there and type back right away, but my spelling is horrific and, doesn't always come across correctly if you can't spell and do grammar right. So, the staff does review everything I write and, the staff will get back to you and I do review what they write. So, it isn't like I'm not trying to stay in touch with what's happening. Got State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. We post where I've been. Joe looks at my pictures because he talks about them every so often in podcasts. At Tacky Chan Twitter, and obviously malegislature.gov. You can see the public hearings and look up bills of interest to you or where things are. And got techychan.org, which is just basically a resource page for people to get some phone numbers and bypass having to deal with me. You can find a phone number there that can help you out. So no lack of resources again for folks to either not have to engage me to find a number or you don't need to talk to us, you know, give us a call.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks so much, Tacky. We will wave to you in the Flag Day Parade.
Yeah, I'll see you then, and I'll talk to you next week.